Today it is the 24th of August 1994. This is a series of brief interviews with the senior staff of the City of Berwick, looking at the broad perspective of the development of the city. This is the fifth interview with the Chief Executive, Mr. Neil Lucas. I was wondering if you could give me some idea of the broad perspectives as you see the city's history over its span of 21 years.
Initially, we started off with a group of 12 councillors that were elected in August 1973. And the big problem that they had at that stage, of course, was that they were not to take official office until the 1st of October that year. So they started having meetings, regular meetings, of the what they call the interim council, and at that stage the late Barry Wallace, who was the Shire Secretary of the Shire of Berwick, and I attended on the administrative side of things, and Ron Chambers, the former Shire Engineer, and Ken Guy Committee, the former Deputy Shire Engineer, they attended. So there's four Shire of Berwick officers attended the meetings of the new council. And put together a huge list of decisions in relation to the establishment of the City of Berwick. And they couldn't be acted on, of course. They couldn't do anything other than prepare a big list of recommendations for themselves when they took official office. And that occurred then from August through to October. And then the 1st of October started coming forward, and we had a committee formed to run the proclamation ceremony. And basically at council level there was two or three councillors on that, and I was on, did all the work, and we organised this proclamation. Well, the actual ceremony itself was made up of three parts. Firstly, for historic reasons, seeing the Berwick District Roads Board had met in the Berwick Inn whenever it was back in the 1800s, we decided to have our first meeting in the Berwick Inn. And we met there in the morning, I think it was 9 o'clock, that would show up in the minutes, of course. And we appointed Barry Simon as our first mayor. We appointed our bankers, which was the Commercial Bank of Australia, our solicitors, Maticlone and Chisholm, and appointed four acting members of staff. That was an acting town clerk, Barry Wallace, acting deputy town clerk, myself, acting city engineer and acting deputy city engineer, that's Ron Chambers and Ken Guy Committee. And at that time there was a cider establishment on the highway at Pakenham, but it was known that they had this product known as Harkaway sparkling or something or other. Well, I kept one of the bottles that we drank that morning, and it's over in our councillor's room in one of those cabinets. And we had this given to us, this Harkaway sparkling cider. We had a glass to celebrate, and there was a press photographer there or two, and had some photos. And the meeting was adjourned, obviously, and the meeting then resumed in the main street, and we closed the road to traffic. The Southern Command Band marched up and down, and its red coats playing. There were probably a few thousand people there. We had a big dais on the grass just to the east side of the War Memorial. And prior to the Governor's arrival, that was Sir Rowan Delacombe, we had a reenactment of the District Roads Board arriving at the Berwick Inn, and it was just not a group of people. Interestingly, the people that acted those parts were members of the family of the first Roads Board, or other people who had long associations with the area. So there was George Wilson, who's I think its grandfather was on the Roads Board, and the late Alan Funston was there, and Philip Keyes, whose forebears were involved, and Barry Johnson, the publican, dressed up as a ye old worldly publican, and they all arrived, and the crowd watched this. And Philip Keyes arrived on a penny farthing bicycle, and a couple of them arrived in a jinka, I think. Then the governor arrived and was greeted by Barry Simon, and the council meeting, which had started in the inn, resumed, and there was a motion of loyalty to the Queen, and the governor read the proclamation, and it was all very formal. And then we went up the hill to the senior citizens building, where there was an historical display put on by the Berwick Pakenham Historical Society. And I think we had a cup of tea somewhere or other too. The meeting, of course, had been adjourned, and it was resumed in the Dufton Public Hall. And that was the time when all of the recommendations that the council had, meeting informally, had prepared prior to the 1st of October. There was a few hundred of them, and they were adopted in batches. And the Dufton Hall was full, a few hundred people there. We had supper afterwards, and that finished the 1st of October proclamation. So then the next major steps were the appointment of senior staff, and council advertised for a dual management system, town clerk and city engineer, and advertised and appointed Pat Northeast and Max Pawsey, and then subsequently appointed myself and Ross Curry as deputies and the rest of the senior staff. And it's interesting in this 21st year, the fact that Ross Curry and myself are still here, and that others appointed at that time are still here. For instance, Peter Meeking, Ken Derricott, and Peter Tempest, senior staff that have been there all the way through. And Max Fletcher and Ron Chidgey also, the two other staff that came to us at the very earliest time, I think it would have been early 74. Interestingly also, Ken Ashton was the superintendent of Parks and Gardens, who were transferred on the 1st of October to the City of Berwick from the Shire, and he's still working with us. And on the outdoor staff, I think, and we'll have to check on this, but I think most of the outdoor staff that came over on the 1st of October 73, there was an automatic transfer of all the people that worked in the Dufton and Berwick ridings of the old Shire. They were automatically transferred to the City of Berwick staff. I think most of them have, if not all of them, have retired or resigned.
I've got a list already of everyone who started in the first year of the city, and I thought that might be an appropriate thing to include, who are still with the city, who've been here through the whole period of it.
So then we established our initial office. Pat Northhurst and myself started at the Shire of Berwick's offices in Pakenham in would have been December. I think it was the 10th of December. And we started just working for the City of Berwick from the Shire office. We had a little couple of cubby holes there. And our big, we had two or three major challenges. One was, where are we going to have our office? And the council looked at the possibility of acquiring or leasing a number of sites. One that comes to mind is the what's now the community centre for the Berwick Bray Retirement Village. It's a big house up there. And we also looked at a couple of other sites, but we honed in the end on a site office owned by the Country Roads Board, as it was then known, which was the building in Kays Avenue, Hallam, adjacent to the freeway at the corner of the Princes Highway. And that had been the site office for the construction of the freeway right through from Dandenong down into the South Gippsland Highway, and it was vacant. So we leased that, which included a reasonable area of land with it. And there was a fellow, Mr. Sapwell, sapper. He was known as a nice old fella, and we rented from him, leased some land from him as well. He was next door. And we established our office with our receptionist and four officers. So there was five of us all together on the first day. That was Pat Northeast, myself, Peter Meeking, Peter Tempest, and the receptionist who Cripps, her name was, and she was with us for a couple of years prior to, I think Mark Armitage came in straight after her. And we set up down there, and we then advertised, appointed more staff, and as the show grew up, we had to build more buildings, more temporary buildings down there. And we were down there quite happily from 1974, start of 74, through to when the Civic Centre was constructed, and that was, I suppose, the next challenge. Once we'd organised our staffing and bought our cars and set up our office equipment and all those sorts of things, had our office going, we really got on with the job of local government. Well, one of the early jobs, of course, was road construction. There were a lot of major roads in our city that were unmade. We knew there was going to be tremendous growth, so we really had to get involved with building a lot of roads, and Heatherton Road and Frawley Road and roads down the western end of the city. We really got involved with, and Inglis Road at Berwick was another early one, and King Road, Harkaway. And we gradually had to build up this infrastructure that was needed for the growth of the city. While I'm talking about roads, Heatherton Road, of course, we knew was going to be a major roadway, and Max Pawsey had the idea that we should design that road to plan for the future. And we did that, and it was really enlightened thinking, in that as the subdividers came along, they gave us the land that we needed for widening for free, and we saved a lot of money from that. The Civic Centre, I suppose, was the next challenge, and we knew we wanted to build one of them. That was obvious, and the question was, where was it going to go? And we looked at a number of sites, and a number of developers came along to us with suggestions, and it all boiled down to three sites. It was the site proposed by Overland, which is the one we ended up with on this site that we have our Civic Centre. I'll talk more about that in a second. And the second site was proposed by a company called CHI, and they owned all of the land around the Percy Truan Reserve, where the Berwick Business Park now is, and they proposed to have the Civic Centre on that site. And the third site was a company that Frank Sedgman, the tennis player, was involved with, and that was on the south-east corner of the Princes Highway and the Hallam South Road, where the Fleming's Carpets, that development is now. So there were three sites. Now, it was a town planning decision that had to be made in terms of where's the best spot for the Civic Centre. But it was also enlarged in a town planning sense, in that CHI and Overland in particular wanted to develop a large regional shopping centre, which would be a huge development and which would be needed for a council of our size. And so the council really had to decide from a town planning point of view which was the best site. To confuse the issue further, CHI offered us, I think it was $600,000 or $700,000, and 30-odd acres of land for our Civic Centre, if we chose their site. And Overland in turn offered us $500,000 and around 42 acres of land on which to put our Civic Centre. I don't recall that the other company offered us anything, but I could be wrong there. But the facts are that the two sites, the two major sites in terms of accessibility and centrality and all that, were CHI and Overland. Now, the council knew that if it made its decision based on money or land, that that wasn't an appropriate way of determining a town planning decision. Town planning decisions aren't made on the basis of what you're going to be given. They're made on town planning criteria. So council had to very carefully work out which it thought was the best site, and it chose this site here where we are. Now at that time there was also a regional planning authority that had to make a decision, that was the Board of Works. The Metropolitan Board of Works also had to make a decision, and it chose the Overland site. So the two planning authorities both chose the same site. There was an appeal by CHI and the other company, and it was the longest running, at that stage, it was the longest running appeal I'd ever had, because there was a lot at stake for the shopping centre, obviously. The appeals tribunal came down after a great amount of time and investigation that the Overland site was the best. So Overland won the day. We got the 42 acres. We got $500,000 towards our civic centre, which we then proceeded to design and get on with the job. Jennings Industries, AV Jennings, as it was then known, got the job. And we did it under a design and construction, where the same people who designed it organised the construction. And we laid the foundation stone. That was laid by Councillor Hugh Hodson in 1977. Took about 12 months to build. And in December, we actually occupied the building in October 78. And the opening ceremony was conducted in December 78. Sir Henry Winnicky declared it open, he was the governor, and Councillor Keith Wishart was the mayor at the time. So we then had our civic centre. Now, while this was going along, we'd established our corporate identity, and we'd had designed and adopted two symbols. One was the logo, which we wanted to be a modern symbol depicting couple of important things that would be easily recognisable, that could be used as a large, you know, a couple of metres height representation, or could be so small that it could appear on letterhead. They were the two sort of extremes. And we appointed a fellow by the name of Max Forbes, designer, to prepare a number of ideas for us. And he came up with a few ideas, and we adopted the logo as it is used today. And that's used, you know, for our corporate identity, so it's on our trucks and our street signs and letterhead and things like that. Around the same time, we also decided we'd like to have a coat of arms, an official one. And official coats of arms are approved by the College of Arms in London, which is part of the Queen's household. It's headed up by the Duke of Norfolk, and I was responsible for getting that organised, and I consulted with Norman Beaumont, former historian, and we appointed Colonel Puttock, who was a member of the Australian Heraldry Society, to design a coat of arms in line with the symbols and the items we thought to be important that Norman Beaumont and myself came up with the ideas, and we sent it over to London, and it was approved. And because it was going to take some time to send out, and we wanted to have an official handing over ceremony, and at that time to produce some pamphlets with a coloured depiction of the coat of arms, we ordered a library painting, let's recall, and that was prepared by the College of Arms and sent out to us. And that was a coloured depiction of how the official document was going to appear when it arrived. The mayoral dinner that Jack Thomas organised, which was at the Doveton Hall, was the occasion. We had Sir Henry Winnicky there to hand over on behalf of the Queen our official coat of arms. The coat of arms itself arrived, and it was in a red box with a gold coat of arms, Queen's coat of arms on it, and it was about half a metre long, and it was square by about 3 or 4 inches square. Don't know how many centimetres that is, 5 or 6 or 7 or something. And we opened it up, and there rolled up inside of it, on the vellum, which is a skin, I think, isn't it? Mm-hmm. With a couple of little coloured cords around each end, was our official document. So we pulled that out of there, and we had it framed, and it's over there in the foyer of the council chamber. Had it framed by a fellow by the name of Trembath, who did framing in those days. And hanging off this document, there were three little golden canisters on a ribbon, on a blue ribbon. And each of them had a crown on the canister. And when you took the crown off the canister, the crown off the lid, inside each of the canisters, there was the wax seal of the three people who'd signed the official document on behalf of the Queen. And that's over there too, in the frame, the canisters and the lids have all been framed. So Sir Henry Winnicky presented that to us, and that was interesting. So our Civic Centre was open. Now, from day one right through till now, we've been involved in the construction of a lot of infrastructure. I've mentioned roads, but obviously the other major facilities that we've constructed is our range of four libraries, three within the Regional Library Service and the BMI Library, and I can tell you a story about that too, but don't know whether that's the time. But we constructed four libraries. We prepared a plan which said that we should have three leisure centres. We built two leisure centres in Devi Hills and Berwick, and there's a story about both of them. So we've got our four libraries, our two leisure centres, our civic centre. We build our services complex, which is an important part of the major infrastructure, all the major roads. And then we did some very interesting, innovative projects, and I suppose they can be described as Wilson Botanic Park. We can talk about that. There's a big, long story there. There's my inner farm. And there's the old cheese factory. The old cheese factory and the parks are the things that I had a lot to do with in the early days, getting them going or getting the land or whatever. And they're really going very well. I think they're two or three projects with the farm that are really good.
Could you tell me the background to the cheese factory? Because I don't think we've done that before.
Old cheese factory. We were aware that there were a number of soldier settler blocks dotted around the place, and we knew because of the growth that we'd need more public open space, and so we identified where they all were, basically. And we heard that there was this old cheese factory down in Homestead Road. And really, Homestead Road at that time was a sort of a faraway place that very few people ever went. There was a couple of old soldier settlers down there and a couple of houses, but it wasn't the sort of place you really went out of your way to drive along Homestead Road, you know. It didn't sort of... It certainly led from Berwick Cranbourne Road to Narre Cranbourne Road, but not a lot of people actually went along there. And there was these old farms there, and so that was that. And someone said, well, there's this old cheese factory which is in pretty good nick, and it's on Crown land on a soldier settler block, and it's in the name of a fellow by the name of Hattam, and I think that's the name, Hattam, yes. And the old soldier settler is in hospital, he's or at home, or I think he was in hospital. And he's not that fit, but his grandson occupies the place. And, of course, the soldier settlers, they had the right to purchase, to take the freehold, but this fellow hadn't. And, anyway, to cut a long story short, we went down there and met with the grandson. And he lived in the homestead, and the place was really covered with creepers and bushes, and it was the product of 100 years of growth around the house that really, for probably the last 50 years or 30 years or something, hadn't had too much attention. They'd concentrated on the farming, or the old soldier settler had really got too old to look after the garden, and it was a shambles, basically. Shambles. And the actual cheese factory, I remember going into that, we walked in the door downstairs, and it was just full of junk. It was a farm sort of shed which was used for storing bits and pieces and all sorts of junk. And we clambered over that and went up these old stairs, and the whole place was full of borer, not the hardwood, the softwood. And the stairs were full of borer, and the floor upstairs was full of borer, and the starlings were in the roof. And it had been used as a hay shed. They'd opened those outside doors where the outside stairs now are, which opened to the four winds. There was sort of no stairs or anything, but they used to throw hay in up there and use it as a hay shed, and the starlings used the hay, and they had, the whole roof was full of starlings and starlings droppings, and it was absolute shambles. And he had parties with his mates up there, I think the grandson, and it was very cosy, comfy, old, pretty dilapidated sort of an affair. Now, that the actual homestead, we went in there, and it was very, very ordinary. The vestibule, I think they called it, right immediately inside the back door, had a floor which sat on the dirt, and the kitchen was pretty horrendous, and the rest of the place, the plaster, was in poor condition. There was an outside toilet just outside the back door, and then we went over to where the shop is, and we went in there, and it had a dirt floor, and it had every piece of old sort of equipment and bits and pieces and broken this and that, and the window had been bricked up at the back, and it was total shambles, and it was just sort of used as a woodshed, workshed sort of thing. And around the garden was, we could clamber around little dirt paths here and there and had a look, and we could see there was a lot of potential. And to cut a long story short, we had the option of purchasing it or getting a management. Now, we were so strapped for cash at that time, we took a decision that we'd prefer to get a committee of management under the Lands Act established. So I went into the Lands Department in the city and met with this fellow. And anyway, we talked him into having the place reserved as a place for public recreation and history and things like that. And the whole site was reserved, 25 acres. And then we had to set it up as a facility. And Jerry Albers, who was the first manager, who's a Delftware potter, took a great interest in it. And he was appointed as manager, and he shifted into the house, and we started doing work on it. Well, you could talk for hours about what happened, but what it is today is a lot different than what it is when we started, that's for sure.
And the research that's just been done recently by Cameron Rock has identified a lot more significance for it than
which is fantastic.
Even knew at the time that it was a model farm for that period. Mm. So it was
had a huge dairy.
Mm. Outstanding example.
Some more interesting things, I suppose, which I think is significant, is the establishment of a corporate structure for the organisation. Something the council didn't do when it started, which I think it should have, but it didn't. But that was the way you did things in those days. But I think it was 87 or 8 or somewhere around there. Sorry, 77 or 8. The council decided that it should have a city manager, and they appointed Pat Northeast with Max Pawsey as deputy. And we started thinking and working more corporately, and I think, more as a team as a result of that. I mean, we always, because we had the same group of people working all the way through, I think the place operated as a team, helping each other sort of thing, thinking of the other person. And importantly, in a local government sense, no one had been here for 30 years or 10 years longer than anybody else. We all started off together. And I think by and large that same feeling has kept going. Obviously you lose it a bit as people leave and that, but nobody really... the idea of departments working together and helping each other is something which is, I think, in Berwick's case, has been a tremendously good, productive, positive thing. And other councils sadly don't all have that sort of thing.
I've got an opinion on that. This is one I'm developing in the process of writing this particular thing. I've got to